Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. Today is February 17th, 2021. And today on the roundup, we're going to be taking a look at three important questions we've been hearing from international educators over the past few days as a result of news stories that have popped into our feeds. But we'll be going in depth into those and providing our perspective on how this might impact what we do in international education. Before we do that, though, I want to give a special shout out to those watching live here on Facebook. Also those watching on repeat, either on our Facebook page or our YouTube channel. And you have a special place in my heart for those of you who download the podcast each week. I've had well over 1,000 downloads now for our podcasts, and really excited to be coming to you as part of your listening pleasure each week and hopefully informing you on some new thoughts on international education. And where we'll start today is with a continuation of what we've been seeing from the association world. And that really is letters to Department of State's new secretary, to now the Department of Homeland Security, since their secretary was confirmed recently, now DHS Secretary Mayorkas. We'll talk through today what the latest letter from ACE again, American Council on Education, and their undersigned 30-plus associations that are involved in higher education. So it's always encouraging to see group letters like this. Certainly we saw a lot of that in response to the travel bans when those first went in place 4 years ago. We saw that effectively in the summer to help stop the ban on returning students coming back that would be doing online or hybrid education. So there's real value in these letters, and it certainly speaks to the unity within the higher ed community on these kinds of issues. And this letter that we're sharing today, I'll drop the links to all these stories and articles into the comments section on the Facebook page. But for today, really, this letter to the Secretary of Homeland Security addresses six different topics that they would hope the DHS secretary would make a priority as it relates to international education, returning the United States to its prominence in international education as a destination for international students. And they see these six things as ways to achieve that. I'll run through them very quickly. First up, the dreaded DS elimination. The request is for a formal withdrawal of those proposed regulations that would have limited duration for international students' stay to a fixed term. So if that would happen, that would certainly be encouraging, rather than just letting it die on the vine, actually withdrawing it officially sends a clear message that the intent is not to restrict international students in that way. The second is to repeal and withdraw the interim final rules that make it harder, more expensive for individuals to receive H-1Bs. They're having court cases that have first found one of these interim final rules violated the Administrative Procedures Act in a series of court cases. But then they moved forward with finalizing it in the days leading up to the end of their administration. So it's really important, I think, for higher ed to come together on this one as well, because it is H-1B is a natural transition from OPT to for those individuals who wish to continue working and hopefully find that way to citizenship. Again, this is in case the green card for PhD graduates does not come into play. Third on the list is to make clear that OPT will remain in place as it was at the end of the Obama administration, instead of the restrictions that sort of indications that OPT would be restricted over the last 4 years with the Trump administration, and addressing the severe dropbox delays for students who are transitioning from studies to OPT in F status. Fourth on the list is restore the Homeland Security Academic Advisory Committee. And those who have, many of you may have never heard of this committee, but certainly it's a high-level committee that has both academic institution reps as well as governmental reps from state, education, others that were part of that. Those meetings were discontinued during the Trump administration. So there's hope there. There's more potential interagency cooperation, more potential foundations for international aid policy. This would be a small step in that direction. Fifth on the list, ensure that DHS officials at port of entry are properly instructed to follow official DHS guidance, allowing international students to enter the U.S., especially during the pandemic, what those are and those, what hybrid programs and those types of things impact the admissions. There's been a number of incidents over the past year that have international students with valid visas were turned away, and that's certainly something that shouldn't happen in a normal state of affairs. And finally, coordinating with Department of State to make sure that there's timely and efficient processing for visas and work authorizations for international students and scholars. It does talk to the issue of funding because both DHS and state, particularly consular affairs, their budgets are determined by the number of applications they get. They're self-funded, supposedly. So that's with a huge decrease in the number of visas issued this past year because embassies and consulates weren't open to even issue visas in many places, most of the major sending countries. That's going to result this year in fewer consular officers able to do visa interviews. So it's going to be interesting to see how state and obviously DHS redress those issues in terms of processing of OPT applications, processing of initial visa applications, interviews, all of that. So we'll see where that goes. But encouraging from ACE to be taking a lead role again in communicating higher ed's desires on topics like international education that are core to what we do in our field. Next question, does your school practice SIEM for overseas students? Now, this has become a real area of my professional development for a number of years, but in terms of crystallizing thoughts around this issue for the benefit of institutions that I'm consulting with on various projects is the conversation typically turns to, okay, how is your institution viewing international education, international students on your campus? Do you take a holistic view in terms of the approach to manage their care, not just in the initial admissions and orientation and academic advising process, but throughout their time on campus to career services, professional development at the end, and then alumni status? How is that international student journey on your campus represented in terms of services, in terms of care by the campus for the community? And that's the larger issue that I think very few campuses get right. Because when I'm doing a series, as many of you know, for IDP Connect on what I'm calling, and it's my baby right now, the 6 P's of Strategic International Enrollment Management. And part of that is in the planning stage, is how are you viewing international students on your campus? And that involves taking the perspectives that you've learned about analyzing your own campus's views on international education. How are they prioritized or even included in strategic plans or mission statements? And really looking at enrollment management for international students as a thing. Enrollment management has been a concept that's been around since the mid-70s, which takes a very data analytics approach to student enrollments, primarily domestic student enrollments on campus, looking at retention rates, graduation rates, all of these things that are documentable and show our institution's ability to manage and care for its students, employment rates, all of those things are part of the mix for an enrollment management model. But that, frankly, doesn't exist in significant numbers for international students. In fact, most enrollment management plans don't have, may not even track international students separately in terms of the issues and needs that they have throughout their enrollments on your campus. So this is why I've made it a real driving force with what I do with a lot of my consultations with institutions these days, is taking a much more cradle-to-grave approach, not just cradle-to-grave in the admissions process from initial prospect through to enrolled student, but throughout the student's journey on your campus to the end of their stay on your campus where they're preparing for their next steps, whether it be further graduate education, working in the United States, returning home, whatever the case may be, into alumni status. How are you tracking alumni, your overseas alumni? How are you preparing your soon-to-be graduates for jobs? Those are the kinds of things that they might, jobs that they may or may not be eligible for in the United States based on the companies that are coming to campus to interview or at job fairs. How prepared are your international students for the end of that journey? So this is a part of what I'm rolling out for to all my clients as I go through the next few months with IDP Connect. We'll start seeing the rest of these articles popping up. The second one is planning, and that'll be coming out in the next week or so. But then we'll be taking a look at platforms, partnerships, personalization, and peers as part of the six P's of international strategic international enrollment management. So I bring that up to say two things. One, I've just done another session for the Chicago Roundtable of International Educators. I had about 65-70 people on that presentation last week. If you would like to watch the recording of it, I go through the different steps. It's also something that I'll be doing at the Study Mississippi Consortium virtual conference next week. So it's a topic that's very much in demand at this point, and one that I'm hoping to share more of with you here in the days and weeks to come. Now, why? Certainly, feel free to watch this. It's about an hour long, but I go really in depth into each of the P's that we're talking about here in the strategic six P's of international enrollment management. But it becomes, I think, even more valid of an approach. Not just my crackpot ideas after 27 years in the business, but you look also this past week, the release of ACE's new report, Toward Greater Inclusion and Success, a New Compact for International Students. And got a lot of love for ACE and their Assistant Vice President of Learning and Engagement, Robin Matros-Helms. She and I worked together at IIE in DC for a number of years. And certainly she has grown into her role at ACE and is just doing incredible things there and really keeping membership in the know as to what's going on. And with her international background, I'm really pleased to see this be a focus for an ACE report. And it really shares what I'm talking about here in terms of how institutions, and she backs it up with their research there at ACE, kind of proving what I've been talking about anecdotally for years, that institutions spend a lot of money on the front end of the process, recruiting students, bringing them to campus, making sure they arrive and get visas, all the wonderful things that have to happen for them to come to the U.S. But what is missing is a commensurate focus on their student experience while they're enrolled. And that is something that it really speaks to the need for a holistic experience approach for international education for students that are coming all the way from halfway around the world in many cases to our campuses to study, to live, perhaps not go home in that time that they're here studying for a four-year degree or two-year master's or a five-year PhD, whatever the case may be. So we're seeing that there are significant impacts when international students who were in large numbers suddenly disappear in large numbers from campuses, whether that be through what we've just experienced with the pandemic this past year or through the travel bans, through bad experiences that certain groups of students have on campus that they tell two friends back home, and then that campus becomes less attractive to students from that country. Those are all the things that we want to look at. And it's really what I appreciate about ACE in their approach here with Robin's report is that it's going beyond just the economic aspect of why having international students on your campus is of value. So I really think that this is something that all campuses should be rallying around and using as a kind of a guidepost for them, a plan. One in which I do with my clients as well, when we go into the different levels of planning, what does that look like? And this is often a bone of contention on campus. I've had one consult with a large public institution where admissions, international admissions, and student services were kind of at odds with each other. They were in different departments, different reporting chains, different vice presidents, and that caused a lot of friction between the leadership over those levels. But what was really kind of symptomatic of what the real issues are is those that are most closely connected with the students, those on the ground folks, they were okay working with each other. It's just the leadership weren't. So getting everybody on the same page at the top level on down is essential if you're going to be taking a more holistic approach to strategic international enrollment management. And this ACE plan here certainly speaks to a lot of that and talks about the value of these students to campuses and also what she shares, and I love this take on it. As the research, this is Robin talking here, as the research report notes, these conversations often neglect the tremendous contributions of international students to the educational experience of all our students on campus. And that's something that I think is really, really important. It stresses that universities need to be aware of financial barriers for international students who often pay full price to come. This next group of international students are going to be coming from a far more diverse range of socioeconomic backgrounds, and it takes a different approach campuses need to take in order to do international student enrollment management well, in terms of taking the time to invest in their services for them on campus. And again, we're not just talking about ISSS services. That's a given. You have to have those. But it's how international students interact with the rest of campus through student employment, through financial aid, through career services, professional development, eventually with alumni. How are their systems in place to care for their needs throughout, not just the ISSS office? Because that's oftentimes what happens, is think about different departments on campus, offices on campus, where if the receptionist or whoever that student meets when they first enter the office, they can't understand them or they've got a thick accent. The default position at a lot of schools is send them to the international office or the advising office, and that can help them. But the reality is it's everybody's responsibility, no matter who that student is, whether a domestic student, international student, a refugee student, an asylee, whatever the case may be. It's everybody's responsibility to be aware of what services are available. It might not be every office's responsibility to be able to perform every service, but they need to know what the procedures are. And that's something that involves a lot of cross-cultural training for staff on different campus. It requires really a mentality and that we're all in this together. It takes a village to raise a student. And when it comes to international students, they're certainly no different. A much bigger, perhaps bigger audience or bigger village to raise that student. But certainly the evidence is clear that international students bring so much value to the classroom beyond just the dollars that they bring to campus and the community. It's their value for your domestic students in helping to broaden their perspective on the world. It's the positive experiences that these international students have that when they go home, if that's their choice to go home, that they have positive feelings about their time in the United States on your campus, and those lead to better relations for the U.S. And their countries in the future when they become leaders in their own right. So these are the kinds of concepts that I think a lot of schools certainly get from within the international offices, perhaps, when they have time to look above the parapet and take a little bit broader perspective on what's going on campus and in international ed as a whole. But it's so often not the case at the top level with leadership that they actually think through these things about the contributions outside the classroom, in the classroom, that these international students have beyond just dollars. And when those conversations do happen, then it's certainly a more positive environment for all involved with international ed. So kudos to ACE for the report. Certainly you'll be hearing more about these six P's of strategic international enrollment management from me in the weeks to come, but certainly want to leave you with that report from ACE that certainly I think helps support a lot of what we're trying to do with SMIE consulting. So next up, we're turning to a question that I don't think there's a campus out there in the United States, certainly, that's been immune from job losses in the last year due to the pandemic, the downsizing that's had to go on, reduction in services. There's so many colleagues I've worked with over the years that have lost their jobs, ones that have been in their positions, seen SIOs at major institutions lose their jobs along with others on their staff. So it's not been a pretty year at all when it comes to employment in higher ed. And those that have survived, more power to you. God bless you. You fought the good fight. You're getting through. And whether that's being proactive in what you do with your colleagues up the chain, letting them know the struggles that you're having and the real restrictions on what you do, and what you can and can't do given the current environment. So I think encouraged to all of you that you're in my thoughts and prayers every day for fighting that fight and making sure that your students, as they always have been, are your priority in terms of your job. So what the two articles that I'm sharing are kind of point and counterpoint for what's happening here in the United States in higher ed over the last year and then what's happened in Australia. Coincidentally, both of these came out in the last few days, one of which was profiled in the Chronicle, that higher ed in the United States lost 650,000 jobs last year. That's almost two-thirds of a million jobs lost in our field in higher ed in the last year. And that's something that's a 13% drop since last February. That's what that amounts to. And it's frankly a gut punch. When you put that into context for the United States, if you look at 650,000 jobs lost, not all those are international ed jobs, but that's certainly, there are international ed professionals in that number. When you look at what that is in relation to the number of institutions, that's 650,000, 4,500 roughly institutions of higher education. That works out to be about 144 jobs per campus that have been lost on average. So that's significant, and that's going to have a lasting toll on campuses, and there's not going to be an easy, quick rebound here. It's going to be years in the making for those that will survive. And we've talked about it before here on the roundup that this is a year where the impact of COVID-19 on the pandemic has had on our campuses is a cumulative effect on top of, for many institutions have already struggling financially. I'm talking here to private liberal arts colleges that don't have the name recognition. Even some smaller state universities may be facing closure or consolidation. That's happening in Pennsylvania. Some of the state institutions there are consolidating. But this is something that we need to have a focus on in terms of the ongoing battle we face in higher ed. But it is one that's going to be continued shakeup over the next several years in our profession in terms of institutions closing, downsizing significantly, dropping majors and programs, stopping graduate admissions in certain programs. So this is a very real challenge we're going to be facing for many years to come to rebound and reconfigure higher ed in the U.S. But to give you a sense of perspective, Australia has less than 40 colleges and universities, or university-level education in their country. They, in the last calendar year, have lost 17,300 jobs. That's 17,300 for 40, let's just say 40 institutions, universities. That amounts to 432 jobs per campus. Okay, so that's triple, basically, what on a per campus basis. That's triple the amount of job losses. So if you're looking for a bit of perspective on this, Australia, their universities have gotten hit much harder and proportionally much more damage has been done in their job force on campus and obviously economically as well. When you think about it, they have had, along with New Zealand, China, some of the most restrictive policies when it comes to returning students or even new students being able to enter the country. And they're still in lockdown mode for, at least for campuses, that they're not able to return yet. There are, I think I saw something this past week that said there are 140,000 students that are studying remotely outside of Australia that are trying to get back in. These are not even including new students that have been admitted in, but just can't get visas to come in. And even if they could get visas, they're not allowed in yet. So that's the real challenge that I think Australia is certainly facing. New Zealand is as well. China, we talked about them last week about their policies on opening the borders again for students. They're not willing to do so yet. And that's having a long-term toll on higher ed institutions in those countries. Certainly Australia and New Zealand are having some government bailouts to help them through. And China, I'm sure they'll get propped up as well. But you're not seeing real urgency on any of their government's parts to reopen yet. And that is going to have consequences reputationally as well. When students are not going to wait another year if they have their heart set on staying in your country, maybe they don't anymore. Maybe they're considering their options. And the U.S. and the U.K. certainly being the more open of the two countries for students, Canada to a lesser extent, but is now reopened. There will be swings, and there always are in terms of where students change their intent and where they want to study. So we'll keep you posted on all that to be sure over the coming weeks and months. But thanks again for making the roundup part of your weekly international education edification. And we look forward to chatting with you more in the weeks and months to come. So until next time, have a great day.